Hey everybody, this is Lori Burtz with the Catch a Pocket Podcast, and tonight, episode 26, Mayor Brandon Whipple. He sat down with me over Skype on May the 15th, and we talked a little bit about himself, and then we talked about COVID and stuff like that as well. If there's one thing I'd really like to point out about Mayor Whipple, Brandon, is that he's really an everyday kind of guy, and he has really insightful, inspirational things just to say on a day-to-day basis. And it's now July, and we've gone through the whole face mask saga, and I really feel like Mayor Whipple did a fine job of getting the point across from the medical community how important it is that we self-distance and that we wear a face mask and that we wash our hands, and how important this is to keep the spread down, because the medical people are being inundated with sick people, us and our loved ones, and it's scary and it can get out of control really quick because it's very contagious. So anyway, thank you, Brandon, Mayor Brandon Whipple, for just standing up for us, along with Lacey Cruz and a whole bunch of other people that got up and spoke their minds and spoke the sciences and the facts and for the best for the community, and made some hard decisions because there's an economy behind it too. There's lots of different influences there, and but that's not what this podcast is about. We do talk about it a little bit, but this is about getting to know Mayor Brandon Whipple, and here he is. Wanted to interview you because you're the mayor of Wichita, this big metropolis, I think, at least in Kansas terms, and just interview you and let the people of Wichita know you a little bit.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I'm really appreciative that you are giving me the opportunity to introduce myself to your viewers, and my goal is to I think we share a similar goal. We're promoting Wichita, and that's one of my goals too. I think as mayor, the mayor is kind of the cheerleader of Wichita, right? Yes. Someone who not only has to do the day-to-day operations that are expected at City Hall, but brag about Wichita so we can attract more people here. And to be honest, I'm actually know this very well because I'm not originally from Wichita. So okay. I'm from New Hampshire. I'm from the Boston area. Okay. And when I came to Wichita, it was just like, almost an amazing discovery. I felt like I kind of won the lottery.
Sure. I kind of feel like that. I lived in Wichita and I live in Park City now, but it's just the very edge. And, but I'm proud of Wichita and I'm proud of being born and raised in Wichita. So we're going to talk about a little bit about where you were born and being your, younger years. And so talk to me a little bit about where you were born.
So I'm actually from a small town called Dover, New Hampshire. We're about an hour and 20 minutes roughly north of Boston. I grew up, I have a brother, a younger brother, a older sister. My mother was a waitress and a bartender, and my dad's a carpenter. We just grew up in this little town and close to the sea. It's the seacoast. That's our region. And it was great, except, I think I had some limited opportunities. And during my second year of college, I felt a calling to service. Similar to, it was right after 9/11. And I felt that calling where a lot of people in my generation felt called to to go serve our country. Sure. However, I sadly wasn't able to get into the military. I had asthma. Okay. And so the AmeriCorps was an opportunity that I looked into as a way to do a year of service where, you know, you get paid very little and it's supposed to be a bit of a sacrifice. And you can go to their programs throughout the country and you take a year off and you, you know, join these the service group. And mine was in Wichita. I applied and I actually worked with like at-risk youth over at South High School. And it's a small program. It's no longer around, sadly. Oh, yeah. So my original plan was to live in Wichita for about a year and then, you know, go back to New Hampshire and finish my schooling. As a first-generation college student, one of the attractions to AmeriCorps is that you get a little less than that $5,000 tuition grant at the end of your service. I was going to have that experience and be able to have a little bit of money to help finish off my last couple of years of my undergrad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I told you or I've told people this. I just fell in love with this place. The people were actually very kind. I had a really terrible accent, by the way. so I think people knew I wasn't from here and they would actually ask me questions and be able to, it was easier to make friends here. In New England, we're a little, our culture is a little different. You know, right. I think that people...
standoffish and we're more open.
Yeah, a little bit. And maybe it has to do with our winters, right? Like where we kind of like live with our core people, our core family for a while and then...
Kind of like... Like what we're doing now. You know?
Pretty much, yeah. Well, I mean, also, we're close to Massachusetts, so we don't want to accidentally make friends with someone from Massachusetts if you're driving through. So, And by the way, Massachusetts to us in New Hampshire, I think, is like Missouri to like Northeast Kansas, which is a little bit of a rivalry. So, anyways, the people here were amazing. The cost of living was amazing. I was able to actually afford an apartment here. And then what really kind of sealed the deal. Well, two things. One was I wanted to take some classes at night while I was here, and I wound up applying to Wichita State University.
Awesome.
And because we had here in Kansas kind of this pro-business policy where if you came to Wichita or Kansas for a job, which I technically did, you get instant in-state tuition because we're trying to attract talent here. Well, I didn't know about that. So I got in-state tuition right away, which was half the cost of any school in New England. All the schools, half the cost.
Like the worst schools, even.
Right. And they accepted all my credits for transfer. I attended two colleges in, New Hampshire, and they didn't play well together. And Wichita State, there was no politics. Right. And then, of course, the second big reason is I met my future wife during that time. And, it was just... complete difference from opportunities wise from New Hampshire, where now that $5,000 grant from AmeriCorps actually paid my last 2 years of schooling. I still took out some loans, but not nearly what it would have been if I went back, to University of New Hampshire. Plus with the acceptance of my other credits from my 2 year school, it made it so I can actually graduate on time. And to me, that was really, the American dream for me was achieving something that my parents never achieved, but always wish they could, right? Like where, and I kind of think that is the American dream, where it's not about what economic class you happen to be born into. It's about, do you have the desire and
the drive,
The drive, the desire, the drive, and really the abilities to go further.
Right.
And Wichita gave me that, where, I was able to really fulfill not only my mother's dream of graduating college, but also going on and get my master's degree. And then eventually I went on, I have a doctorate degree now. It took me about 7 years to finish a 4 year program.
Really? What is it in?
So it's actually in leadership studies with a concentration in policy and law.
So you probably got a lot out of that doctorate.
I did. And I joke where it doesn't actually make me a great leader. It actually instead just makes me recognize bad leadership.
Exactly.
Being in the legislature, sometimes you see the way they're trying to pass something or kind of maneuver something, and then it will somewhat trigger these, you know, oh, that's transactional, or that's laissez-faire, or that's not the right way to do it. And right. And sometimes when I look back on even my own performance on trying to, you know, get bills passed or something, it's easier to critique than in the moment. And I'll tell you, one of my professors at Wichita State, as a grad student, mm-hmm. I was taking policy classes. I was actually going to go into the Peace Corps. So I was doing a degree on like cross-cultural studies and public policy to help match me well where, you know, I was supposed right. to go to like the Caribbean, I think, and work with at-risk students. So anyways, they mentioned something about how like having a good idea isn't enough, where right. there are plenty of people with good ideas and who do research and are really good at, you know, if their idea made it through, it would cause a great result. Right. However, they lack leadership. And so without leadership, you actually don't have the vehicle to enact your good idea. And that stuck with me because I thought I had some good ideas and thought, mm-hmm. you know, as an idealist, I guess, as a yeah. young person, it's just a good idea should, you know, override emotional responses. Yeah. But I didn't really know what leadership was. So I wound up doing some research and, you know, it's tough to describe leadership, I think. It's kind of like art, you know, like you know it when you see it,
sure.
but, you know, or when you feel it, but it's not, it's less definable. So I wound up pursuing a doctorate in leadership studies instead of going to law school or doing, you know, I think some of the traditional route is for people who want to work in public life. So yeah, I 7 years later, I was able to get my 4-year program. And
how did that fall in line with you becoming mayor?
So actually, to be honest, like I wasn't really going to run for mayor. I was a legislator. I thought I did an internship when I was an undergrad at Wichita State. And like I said, Wichita really just opened my eyes to what opportunities are out there, what my potential could be. When I was on student government at Wichita State, I got to lobby in the Kansas legislature. Like we went up for a day, we lobbied about student issues and talked to lawmakers. And then I wanted to do public policy. And I realized that good public policy comes from those who advise elected officials,
right?
Like where you have some elected officials who get elected and the next day they think they're smarter than they were the day before.
Right.
But those ones aren't as good at getting things done. And then you have some people who get elected and they keep good advisors around them. And then I wanted to be one of those advising people. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, if I could be charismatic enough to get myself elected, plus have the academic background to do public policy, I'd be a double threat. I wouldn't have to actually rely on think tanks or on lobbyists or parties or platforms or anything. Like I could actually kind of jump into the weeds on policy. So I was a legislator for about 7 years doing stuff at the state level. I was a member of leadership. I was the ranking member on the Commerce, Labor, and Economic Development Committee, and then on a Higher Education Budget Committee. And, you know, my biggest achievement there was we held the line on tuition increases for the first time in 10 years by, you know, making sure that we could manipulate the budget enough and hold that line for other first-generation college students like myself. Right. So I really wasn't going to run for mayor. And then I wound up, it's like this time last year, like I'm waiting for Facebook memories to tell me that, like, you know, when I pop up my logo, they're like, okay, I'm considering running for mayor. Because, you know, part of me is joking, like, oh, what were today's Brandon tell last year's Brandon, right?
Right.
By the way, it's going to be a lot different than you thought. And you're going to have to deal with a crazy first few months.
Wow, this is an insane time to be a leader, I would say, because it's just so unpredictable. I just don't know what tomorrow is, really.
You know, and I'll tell you about that. So in the campaign, I wasn't going to run, and I wound up getting a call from some Democrats who, you know, I am a member of the Democratic Party, and they said, you should run. And I kind of laughed it off, right? Like, I thought, like, well, there's, like, probably some old Democrat in line who put his time in, right?
Whose turn
it is.
Yeah.
And then, like, I get a call from a Republican or an email from a Republican who said, like, why aren't you running? And I wound up calling him and say, because I thought it was a typo. I thought he was joking with me. And I was like, should I run? And he called me and we talked on the phone and he said pretty much same thing as the Democrats, where people deserve a choice. Like, you know, you might not win. You probably won't win.
A good choice.
People deserve a choice. Go put your name out there. Like, what do you have to lose? And, you know, if you do it right, you can at least talk about your values and get that out there. And if you lose, you lose, and you go back to the legislature.
And you learn a lot, you know, even if you lose an election, you learn a ton of stuff.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, in my sport, I always learned more when I lost than I did when I won. Like, sure growing thing. Up in my sport was like the only thing I was good at. I was really bad at school, really bad at.
What was your sport?
I did Olympic Taekwondo.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I did Taekwondo, and I also did kickboxing. And
you still do it?
I do. I practice. I'm the old guy in the gym now who gets beat up by the younger me. So, like, back in the day, like, I had a lineup of, like, older guys who, myself and my friend Tom, we were alternates on a U.S. team. We were he tried out. I made it to alternate. He, we medaled at the Nationals for a few years in a row. And it was because we had people who were willing to help us get better and pretty much get beat up. And now I'm that guy. Now I show up to the gym and I kind of pass that on to, you know, people who are late teens, early 20s, who are just phenomenal athletes. So, but during the campaign, you learn more than you lose, and you got to be, you know, you got to be willing to take a risk. And you step in a ring, you might get knocked out. Like, you're just not sure. But my best moments are when I think I bit off more than I can chew, right? When I got into the ring with a Pan-American champion, second year of college, heavyweight, fastest heavyweight I've ever seen. We were practicing at a gym. And I was actually, you know, he beat me up. Like, he was good. But I was more amazed with the way I responded while thinking, where, like, I actually, like, held my own. Like, he brought me to a higher level. So running for mayor, that's kind of what I thought, where – this will bring me to that level where, like, I'm not just going to get beat up, because instinctively I'll fight back. Right. Like, that's what happens.
And you have the skills, and you have the intuitiveness and the ability, and you can depend on those things to, you know, help you, assist you, whether you're getting beat or whether you're succeeding, you know.
Exactly. We call it trust your training, you know. So trust your training. Like, you might not mentally be able to picture how this is going to go, but – you know, my training in the legislature, my formal training, you know, my education, like, trust your training that if you are presented with this particular problem, you will be able to find the policy answer. So during the campaign, and this kind of gets me back to a little bit of what I think you mentioned about the first few months of running, I mean, of being mayor, we had a saying where if you thought about the whole campaign and me being an underdog, right, like not having the backing of the political establishment on really for local government, they really kind of put their chips on two other candidates. So we were outfunded. We had a different strategy. But mentally, to try to prepare for that, it was a, you know, we don't know if we're going to win this race. We don't know. But we can win today. Like, let's focus on today. And, you know, what can we do today to make sure we win? We're out of here with 51% versus their 49%.
Right.
So win the day was a big, you know, the big, like, goal of the campaign was, like,
did we win today? Use that as a motto when you were campaigning, like, in the office, and say, you know, let's just win today.
Exactly. And that's where this really was for us mentally, where – you know, I got to go on and go on a stage and go with eight other people for a debate and actually make myself stand out. And then I got to do like three other things the next day. So, like, we'll focus on the debate. Just focus on today.
So you had a good team around you when that was happening, and they were advising you on, like, issues and what to say, or what your value core was going to be when you went out there, so that you could, you know, instinctively answer questions in a pointed direction toward your goal.
Right. And I had an amazing team. And that's the thing is, like, we're all kind of a team of really scrappy underdogs, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where
You're Democrats in Kansas, so.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, the and not only that, but Wichita Democrats, where, you know, you have totally other areas of the state where I think the party is better funded and, you know, Democrats make, different inroads. And Wichita's not really like that. So, you know, my team was also more help me with that. Let me know we're in this together, right? And utilize different stuff where it's like $5,000 to get a commercial recorded and cut and done right.
Right.
We did it with like this little camera and, you know, a guy with a MacBook. Yeah. And like, you know, like a wired microphone that we were like with like a 12-foot cord that we'd hide in like a couch cushion. Nice. So yeah. With chicken lights, you know, for our lighting. Yeah. So like super, you know, low cost stuff, but because we had the team who was smart, who could say, okay, try this music with it, or let's try this or that, or let's say it this way. You know, we were able to, I think, not only persevere over being underfunded, but also it allowed the campaign to really become our own, right? Like where we didn't have some professional come out and tell us like, this is your script. Instead, right. Like we developed it on the spot where this so is what we want to say was the best way to say it.
Right. Like that authenticity of who you are as people came out more in your campaign than maybe someone else.
Yeah, right. Like we didn't have our campaign and that was kind of the fun part of it. Right. Cause the other thing is like, you kind of want to have fun with this was like, if we're going to lose, which we might, we want to make sure that we we're proud of what we did and that we we presented ourselves as authentically as possible.
Right.
So like, yeah, and just to fast forward a little bit, that win a day attitude is what has gotten me through these last few months where you step in to become a mayor. A few days before being sworn in, we heard that Spirit was going to lay off all these workers. Mm-hmm. And then also we would have issues with the supply chain. Like there's trigger consequences to that, which is overwhelming. And then, you know, a couple months later, we get COVID, which there's no playbook for what we're going through right now. Like there's
and you're getting so many messages from so many different, you know, fairly credible sources, you would hope.
Right.
And you have to pick which ones are what, I guess you would have to study what others are doing and then relate it to the most people here, you know?
Right. And we do that. And this is the interesting thing with COVID is coming into this. And I think that because we've lived through it, we're still living through it, but we somewhat have a grip on what the expectation is now.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to remind people, coming into this, like all that misinformation that was out there, where like we had on social media, like a friend of a friend of a friend who's high up in the government says that we're going to roll tanks down, you know, the roads and put everyone under martial law. Yeah. Like there were people who were seriously worried about that. And of course that never happened. And I don't think ever would happen, but the fear of the what ifs. And then also the ignorance, this is just the flu. This isn't that bad.
Right.
And, you know, so that political, I think, courage that it takes to try to push the hard decision, which is recognizing that there's a problem and taking action. And the county commission are the ones in the driver's seat. They're the ones who are the Board of Health, who can do local ordinances and such. So my job was like, all right, as mayor, what do I add to this? Like, cause I'm still in the passenger seat, right? Like, we're still in the car. So what do we add to this? And it was more, once we're in a room talking about policy for the stay in orders and how we can make this work and the timing of it, which we did a really good job on overall. My job, because I have, I think, a better social media reach than some, and then also, like, I was still working with my team where we could produce these videos. You know, now they're all social distancing, but, you know, we were able to get this information out like really fast, like about like, this is real accurate information. This is what's happening. This is what we're doing. And then also calling in the United Way and, you know, saying, hey, this is what's going to happen in the next week. People are going to be looking for resources and also looking for a place to volunteer. And can we count on you guys to help us out to be our one-stop shop for nonprofit and other services? And they said, yeah, like they sat at my table and just absolutely stepped up to the plate when asked that question.
So that really helped us, the city of Wichita, a lot by having like PPE. Is that what they were doing or were they doing the testing?
Originally, I'll tell you how it's kind of like that one meeting kind of evolved where I was looking for, we're already utilizing websites to try to create communities of people who will go shopping for other people who are like older, who are part of that at-risk group. Well, some of the people who are in this at-risk category, they don't go online, right? Like that's not their main, they needed a phone number to call. Mm-hmm. United Way had 211 set up where you can dial 211 and you'll get someone. And they usually can match you with either a governmental service or a nonprofit service. And also they just get disasters. Like they're the ones who come in and help out after a tornado. Right. What we did originally, we were looking for like, and this is back when like toilet paper was being sold off the shelves, right? Like where like, hey, I'm looking and I kind of surveyed the scene online about like what the pulse of the public was at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had people who couldn't buy toilet paper. People were afraid to go out, and then people who bought too much and they wanted to donate it somewhere so other people can have it. You know, they kind of freaked out when they were at the store and now they get it. So United Way first started our partnership with them as that, where if you want to make donations of stuff, then you can. And then if you need stuff, they'll call and they can help you get that stuff. Okay. And now they have actually, that position has evolved where if you feel like you might have the symptoms of COVID, you call 211 and they will go through a list of like, these are the symptoms. Do you have this, this, and this? And if you have, you know, two out of the three or whatever the number is, they actually will say, okay, go drive your car to this site and over in Cedric County. We'll test you for COVID for no cost.
Oh, wow.
So now they're an integral part of the response. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, okay. So I'm going to bring it back because we're on COVID and COVID is a big deal. And I know it's a big deal in your world. And I appreciate that. I appreciate you for, you know, representing us and keeping people in mind and getting those tests because that's really important right now. But what I wanted to talk to you about is your inspiration in your life. So I know there's lots of stories to be said about inspiration, but what's one that maybe inspired you to reach for where you are today?
To be honest, like my motivation comes from really kind of the way I grew up where, it was kind of the ongoing trigger, my entire path forward where, to be honest, like I'm one of the only people of my group that I grew up with, who went to college, who has gone on and done other things, who have pretty much, achieved, I think what they wanted to. And there were just certain variables, like little small things that happened along the way that really made that possible for me. So, you know, my Taekwondo instructor, he was the one who made me feel like I could go and be a national champion.
What was his name?
Mr. B, actually. His name's Adam Beauvert, and it's French. But, you know, we're kind of by Quebec, French Canada. So it's just Mr. B, right? So,
Mr. B. Okay.
Yeah. So, and he's great. He was my Taekwondo coach, but he was also, working on a master's of social work from, Boston University. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking back, I think he was using his social work powers on me, right? Like he was a great listener. He was very, I think he not only saw something in me, but he also had the tool set to, with his social work and with his martial art background to, in his age, he was, you know, I think probably mid-20s, right? He was a grad student, mid to late 20s. And I was young, I was 17, 16. He was able to really kind of reach me. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have gone to college. College was one of those things where I was embarrassed to ask people about because I thought that in my own mind that there was just a, I'm not the type of person who can do college. So it was like almost like a shameful secret that someone like me would want to go to college. And, you know, because I didn't want to be laughed at. So it was Mr. B who taught me like, well, hey, he used some logic, something along the lines of like, you know, there are a lot of people who want to do martial arts, but only one of them becomes a national champion. And, you know, the 16 to 17 year old advanced division, 155 and under. And that was you. You did something that only one person in that category can do. So what makes you think that you can't do
something
that I go to college where so many people do it. Like, you know, people graduate, like this whole big percentage, you kind of like played the odds with me, right? Like, and in like the mind of an 18-year-old or 17-year-old, like it made sense. We're like, yo, you're right. Like, I guess I can achieve something that is really rare to achieve. So why can't I achieve something that's that is supposed to be a lower hanging fruit, easier?
Sure.
So he convinced me to go to my advisor and ask for college. I didn't know about 2 year schools. I graduated high school, by the way, like a 1.6 GPA. Like, absolutely.
You were not trying very hard for it.
No, like, well, yeah. And I had some other things going on that I, you know, I don't think I had properly addressed as far as, you know, reading and other. And when you get behind, like, it's tough to get caught up. So, anyways, I didn't know about 2 year schools. And so I went in and I talked to my advisor and I asked him if, you know, there are, is a college that would accept me. He pretty much told me no. He pretty much told me that, you know, I was learning auto body at our tech prep program, and I could go paint cars and make a really good living working on vehicles and work at a shop. And, you know, he's right. I actually really like cars. Then I went and reported back to my taekwondo instructor. I was like, no, I guess, you know, it's just not for me. It's not for everyone. And then he said, go back again. Be persistent. Like, don't accept no. So I did. And I remember this moment. His name was Dr. Castle. He was the advisor. And he had a big, thick Dell computer. And I was persistent. I was like, I'm sure that there's at least one college that I can go take classes at. Like, I can earn my way in, right? Like, I know my GPA is terrible, but I can earn my way in. Like, and I can work hard because I've worked hard on my other stuff. Well, he printed off a list. And he just kind of like throws this list at me. He's like, here's a list of schools that might accept you or might accept someone like you with your grades. And I remember thinking myself, like, there's a list? There's a freaking list of colleges, like not just like the one that, you know, is struggling for students, like
the bad guy school or whatever.
Right. You know, like, and I looked on it and it was a 4-year school on it. Like, there was actually 4-year schools on it. So it was eye opening that like there's opportunity. And So I'm talking about myself a lot. That was a transformational moment for me where I did go on to college. I saw it as a clean slate. I wound up getting good grades. Even though like I had to really retrain myself, like study wise, like figure out like what my best
actually do it and actually
And then like because we learn differently, and I had to accept that I don't learn the same way as everyone else.
Sure.
Also, I had to take paper classes that were really high school level classes, right? Like you have to take like the pre
the ones that don't actually give you the credit, and it
right, but they sure cost the same. Yeah. Those ones were like, you know, they're like 099 level instead of like 100 level.
One of those.
So sorry, so I pay my dues. And then I wound up hurting myself my second year of college, and it was a transformational time for me. I was 21. I was getting my foot redone pretty much. Like, I hurt myself doing taekwondo, right? Like, my shock induced arthritis, and I was like taking it took away like the arch, like pretty much like you kick something too hard for so long, you wind up messing up your foot. Okay. So, believe it or not. So, I was getting like my foot fixed, and so I was taking a year off because my, The physical therapist was that time frame overlapped with nationals, which means I wasn't able to go by the nationals and qualify for the U.S. team. And, you know, like my year was I was stuck out a year. So what am I going to do? So that's when I did AmeriCorps. It was a transformational moment for me because it made me realize, too, that like, what if I'm not just supposed to be a fighter? Like, what am I supposed to be doing? And because of Mr. B and him taking the time to mentor me, to encourage me to go forward and do something I didn't think I could do, but he knew I could do. He saw it in me, even if I didn't see it. It made me want to go and do that to someone else, right? To go pass that along. So originally I was going to do social service stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I was going to be a case manager and then a social worker. And that got me into, you know, policy where we're like, all right, well, how can I cause the greatest good? And it was kind of this debt that I've carried where, and I'm still carrying it, where like literally it was this little, it was this moment, these little knobs throughout my life where they twisted a couple notches that way instead of that way. And that made the difference. So what is my role in trying to make a difference in other people's lives to promote some good? And also like, I'll tell you, like, I'm the least likely person to be in a situation like this. Like I kind of joke where like, if you guys knew my story, like you probably wouldn't believe me where you wear a tie, you wear a suit, you kind of look like everyone else. Like, but you also kind of feel like you're hiding who you really are, like behind these symbols. Right.
Sure.
So, like, I think I have a better opportunity to than some of my peers who maybe, and I don't want to say that an easier route because I don't know their lives, but right. had a different route to becoming a place of influence. We got a lot of people who become a place who come from influential families, and that helps them kind of train themselves to become influential when they become adults. I didn't come from that, which right. I think allows me to kind of complement our community when I can identify people who are like me. And yeah,
which is the majority of the people, because most people don't get raised with that great wealth or poverty for that matter, but just live in that middle working class road. And it's good to have a representative like that here in Wichita, I think, and a Democrat even more so.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of Democrats, but yeah, and that's kind of what I think I bring to the table, right? Like, if we're a team and we all powers, or we all have like super plays we can do, mine I think is I can talk to normal people who I know what it's like to have to wash my sneakers with like bleach and with like soap and try to pass them off as new on the first day of school because all the other kids got new shoes and I want to make mine look new, you know? So like, I know what that type of experience is.
So you can relate to people of all aspects, and that's awesome. Do you have some little voice of inspiration for Wichita moving forward?
You know, Wichita is an underdog city. You know, I think that Wichita kind of matches why I feel at home here. You know, we're a city that, you know, we have done great things in the past. And we look towards our past to help us, I think, realize our potential moving forward, right? Like, back in the 80s, Wichita's economy was growing at twice the rate of the national average. You know, we're the air capital of the world. We give birth to some of the world's greatest businesses with our entrepreneurial spirit. And so we are never out, you know? Like, when you watch Wichita State basketball, they're never out. They could be down so many points, but they are not out, you know, because that's our attitude. That's who we are. Right. So moving forward, we got to get through this crisis. Face it today. Let's just win today. You know, and right now we're winning as long as we can hold it together. Where we are not like Kansas City, Missouri right now, who is just devastated. We are definitely not like a coastal city. Like, we are going through the hardship for the greater good. And it's coming at a cost. And it's not so much at a cost of how many deaths we're having, because we are actually doing okay compared to other cities. It's actually at a cost, I think, of our own mental health and our own economic health. And the reality is, when we're, I think, at hard times, we're down a few points, that's when Wichita actually excels. So I expect that we will, when things start getting better, we will get better. You know, Wichitans don't just sit around feeling bad for themselves. They take action. We are the underdogs. We're used to being in this position. We're used to being down a few points. And now it's time to make some plays. So I believe, I don't have any like great quotes or anything for you guys. I think that
just win today.
Win today. Win the day is super important, because if you think too much about what next week could be, we should always plan for the future. But like, you know, we can only affect right now, like this moment, like what is going to lead to the rest of the day. So I think we'll get through it. Our underdog spirit, I think, is going to help us through it. And, you know, Wichita's a tough people. And we just got to focus on today. And, you know, tomorrow, make sure we're focusing on tomorrow.
Well, Mayor Brandon Whipple, it's been a real pleasure. You're a real great guy for even giving me the time. And thanks for catching a pocket with me today.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Let me know if there's anything else I can do.
Okay, that was Mayor Brandon Whipple. And I really enjoyed our talk together, and I wish the audio could be better on Skype, but it wasn't too bad. And I appreciate everyone for listening that does listen. And I want to tell y'all to like me and follow me and all that crap. So do that if you have time, or tell a friend or something. But also, learn from Mayor Whipple, because I tell you what, I've been watching all these interactions and all these different kinds of things on the news and whatnot, and I was watching the way that the mayor works with the city council and the community, but the interactions that I see on Facebook and whatnot are positive, and they are respectful, and I think there's a lot to be said for being positive and respectful during crisis times. And even though there's not any bombs going off per se, this is a time that tests all of us, and we get to see the true nature of people during these times. And I feel like I'm glad that I have people that rise when things feel a little bit down. So thank you, Mayor, again for being on the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you guys catch a pocket you can be proud of. I know I did. See you next time.